aspect of litigants coming into a bed and breakfast in Torah, I know I'm curious that sometimes people feel it's aggravating, is when you walk into a Bezdin, you are not only offered the choice of making a pshara, a compromise, but actually you're urged to do so by the dayanim. So if you're the losing party and you know that you have a chance of losing, you think to yourself, well, let me grab on this opportunity. However, what happens if you feel that you have an ironclad case and there's no shaila about it? I mean, a lot of people actually come into the bed and think there's no shaila about it and then discover otherwise. But let's assume that you do come into the bed and you are pretty much convinced of the strength of your case, and you find that you're being asked to agree to a compromise. As I said, it's a bit aggravating. And a lot of people feel that there's no justice here, that if I'm being asked to compromise, there's a lack of justice. After all, if you walk into the civil courts, there is such a thing as ADR, as alternative dispute resolution, but that takes place outside the court. Mediation or arbitration takes outside it. I don't think that it's common to find a high court judge urging to make a pshara. But the halacha is different than the English civil law. In fact, different than any other civil law. That in halacha, the din is, as Shulchan Aruch says, mitzvah loyma lebali dinim, it's a mitzvah to actually tell the bali dinim, the litigants that come in front of you, at the outset of the case, immediately, hadin atem rotzim, do you want din? Or do you want pshara? Now, the word pshara is a bit difficult to translate accurately. Sometimes, I've seen in one book where it was translated arbitration. I don't think it's exactly, that's exactly accurate. Some people translate it, probably the best or the closest translation is compromise. Compromise, however, has a very negative association. Actually, and the word pshara, the Gemara's term for it is a different term. The Gemara uses the term mitzvah litzoa. Now, what does the word bitzua mean? Some say that the word litzoa is like you find in bitzias hapas. You're splitting it. And that's even more aggravating. You know, you walk into a bezdin and you feel that no matter how great your case is, that it's all of a sudden going to be split. So the question is, why is there such a halacha of mitzvah litzoa? Or as the din is mitzvah doma lebali dinim bitzila, to say, do you want pshara? One more point. The way the Shulchan Aruch puts it, the Shulchan Aruch starts off, it's a mitzvah to tell them both. Shulchan Aruch doesn't actually say, is there a mitzvah to urge parties for pshara? That is already a machlokus in the Achronim, the Taz, and the Sma. The Taz says that the Dayanim are just really supposed to put it as evenly, both possibilities. However, the Sma says that it's even more important for the Dayan to propose and to urge a pshara. I'll just read out his words. He says, Sorich hadayin lahazbir labali dinim. The Dayan should explain to the litigants that pshara is better for them. Shebi pshara noyach lehem. And not only that, uledaber alibam. The daber alibam is to try to convince them. Ula yaskimu al pshara. They should take that option. That's what Sma's opinion is, that the dayanim have to actually push for the pshara. Now, the Shulchan Aruch continues, and it's the language of the tour. Chol bezdin she'oise pshara tomid. Listen to this, it's a very startling language. Any bezdin who its custom is to do pshara all the time, well, hareze meshubach. That's a preferred bezdin. It flies against our common sense. Our common sense is that a bezdin is always doing pshara, if we look down upon it. It's not true. The way the Shulchan Aruch puts it is hareze meshubach. Now, where is this whole idea, this source of pshara, and what's the advantage of pshara? It's actually the Gemara. Gemara says in Sanhedrin, It rings in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho oimer mitzvah litzoa. It's a mitzvah to, and I use that word again, litzoa. What exactly it means is not 100% sure, but I'll get to it. Is to, let's use for argument that we just say the word is to compromise. Shenemar, he brings a pasuk in Zechariah, pasuk in the Novi. The pasuk says, Emes u'mishpit shalom shiftu b'shareichem. Emes, truth. Mishpit, justice. Shalom, peace. Shiftu, those three you shall judge in your gates, in your cities. So the Gemara asks the obvious question. The three don't fit together. Halo b'mokam sheish mishpit ain shalom. Almost, if you're going to have mishpat din, so there's no peace. Ulumakav shiyei shalom ein mishpat. And if you have shalom is ein mishpat. There's no either peace or justice. How do you have the two together? Ela concludes the Gemara. Eizehu mishpat sheyesh boi shalom. What is a mishpat? What's a judgment that has peace in it? And the oimer bitsua, that is a compromise. So the Gemara says right now, the Gemara brings this pasuk in Zechariah, and the pasuk is brought as a source in Halacha. The Tur brings it also, it brings the Gemara, that the pasuk says, Emes u mishpat shalom shiftu b'shareichem. And the Gemara's comment is, Ezel mishpat sheyesh boi shalom zup shara. What is the mishpat that has shalom in it? What is it? Pshara. And on that, the Torah links it up. That's why, kol dayin sheoise pshara tomid hareze meshubach. In other words, the two are linked together. The Gemara not only says, that brings the pasuk, that there is such a possibility, but the Torah concludes from that possibility that it's not only possible, it's the preferred method. It's kol dayin sheoise pshara tomid hareze meshubach. I always found it's interesting. He says that the dayin who does it all the time. Now, you might have thought that, and it would be certainly forgiven for thinking, that there are cases where pshara might be a better idea. There are cases where pshara might be a worse idea. And yet, the Torah says that the dayin who has a philosophy of making pshara, he's the praiseworthy dayin. We have to understand why that is. It's quite a unique idea. It's a novel idea that should be the preferred method of ending a din Torah. One more point. The Shulchan Aruch added on a term, mitzvah lomar lebalei dinim b'tchila. It's a mitzvah to tell them immediately. He uses the word mitzvah. Doesn't say tzarich, but he says mitzvah. Now, is that just part of the kol of the dayin that makes pshara tamid harezim meshuvach? It's actually a step further. It's the Mora says mitzvah lemeima b'hu. It's a mitzvah to tell the litigants. Idina b'iso, do you want din or do you want pshara? Now, I told you before that the taz and the sma differ whether you should urge it or whether you just have to put both possibilities in front of the parties. The taz says in the name of the maral that it's equal, you bring both, but the sma says no, you should try to urge them for pshara. But why? Now, one thing it's not. Before I get to what it is, I want to say what it's not. It's not because the dayan is afraid to paskin a shaykh. The Toras Chaim and the Marsha both say, and on this Gemara in Sanhedrin, that it has nothing to do with the fact that a dayan is afraid to paskin. But it's for the good of the parties. So, however, we'll soon see there is an advantage for the dayan also. But what's more telling is that the halacha is, the Sma says, not only is this rule of giving both parties the option or urging the parties to take pshara is a practice that should be at the beginning of the Din Torah, but it extends further. Even after the Din Torah has concluded. Now this is startling for the Tassim. And, as the Shulchan Aruch says, the dayan already sees which way it's going. He knows leheichen hadin noite. And one would have thought at this point, it's wrong to offer a pshara. The dayan already sees Reuven and Shimon have both come into the Beis Din, and he sees Reuven is right. Still says that Eiv aval pi sheshama divrehem. He's heard what they had to say. V'yodea leheichen hadin noite. And he's formed a view. He may have formed a conclusion in his mind. Who is right? Still, the halacha is that you're allowed to put pshara. You can push it. At what point? There is, however, a point where pshara is not an option. The Shulchan Aruch says achar gmar din. There's a machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos. What does the gmar din mean? Does the gmar din mean when the he's passed the Shiloh, or when it's already not only passed him, but it's already given out over for an execution for it's to be done. But the idea that even though the Dayan knows which way the it's going, still it says that he should still try to urge Pshara. And the question is why? I mean, Pshara seems at that point in time. Pshara seems to be almost what we call Ivus Adin. It's a perversion of the Din. It's not. And the Shulchan Aruch says, and the Sma says, that this is not considered if a Dayan tries to urge the parties of Pshara, even though he knows which one's right, it's not considered tricking a party. And he says the reason is this. Because he's actually doing a favor to the victor. Kind of favor. Because noyach lechaveroi sheyevater ma lebaldinoi kedei sheyetavich sholem beinechem. It's important in order to have a resolution that the resolution will bring sholem between the parties. It's better for the person to lose a bit and to have sholem than to win everything and to have enmity forever. Now that shows a very interesting thing about the Torah's hashkofa on justice. Now the secular idea of justice is one's right and one is wrong, and that's the ultimate goal. The Torah doesn't say that. The Torah says the ultimate goal is not the justice. The ultimate goal is kedei sheyetavich sholem b'neihem, that there should be a sholem. Now, when a Dayan looks at this idea and he has this imperative in front of him to try to restore shalom between the parties, the question is how far does it go? Because one has to be quite, if you don't mind the word, judicious in applying the shalom. On the one hand, the halacha is that kishem, that your muzor lo lahatos hadin, you're not allowed to make any perversion of din. The halacha is you're not allowed to be lahatos hapshara, you're not allowed to make any perversion of the compromise. And the Gemara has a term. The Gemara says that a dayan has to be careful, the Gemara says Baba Basha, not to be what's called dayane chatzatzta. Dayane chatzatzta is, you know, half for you and half for him, and a guten tug, that split it down the middle. The Gemara says pshara has a tzedek in it. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof, says the Gemara. The Mechil says echod ledin veechod lepshara. Why does the Torah say twice the word tzedek? Tzedek is for din and tzedek is for pshara. So pshara doesn't mean that you just decide, you know, let's give 50-50 and decide. Pshara mandates that you have a certain line of what's considered fair in your mind also. On the other hand, though, the Beis Din has a power in certain occasions to compel pshara. Now, this is a bit of a startling idea. You can understand that if litigants come into a Beis Din, you offer them the option, and they accept the option. You urge them to accept the option. You understand? Okay, that makes sense. They chose the option of pshara. Now they're bound by it, whether they like it or not. But there are occasions, and I'm going to examine these occasions, where the Beis Din can actually force the parties to accept the pshara. I'll give you two cases, two examples. One is where it's difficult for the Beis Din to actually get down to the bottom of the din or of the metzias. In other words, very often you have a defera and litigants come in front and everybody's lying through their teeth. And you're sitting in the Beis Din, it's quite obvious that everybody is lying. And this is, by the way, it's not as uncommon as you think. In our Beis Din, I have the Aseres HaDibros standing on top of my head, and I try to point to the parties, and I say, you know, the Loisan Evriacha Eid Shoker, you know, do not say false Eidus. And yet people come in and they do say false Eidus. The worst problem is when it's not one side that's doing it, but both sides are doing it. And so there's very often a situation where the Beis Din will not be able to really satisfactorily determine to themselves even who they think is telling the truth. This is a Tshuvas HaRosh, which is the basis of this. And he says that even if the Beis Din is having trouble getting to the bottom, it's incumbent upon the Beis Din to finish the case. Now, there is an exception to this, which I don't want to go into today, we don't have that much time, where a Beis Din feels that there's a fraudulent case here. So one of the parties has been fraudulent. That's Din Merumah. In that case, if somebody is bringing a fraudulent claim, the rule is that the Beis Din is supposed to remove themselves from the case. Excuse me. But that's a pretty rare phenomenon. Of course, by the way, if the fraudulent one is not the claimant but the respondent, it's forbidden for the Beis Din to remove themselves from that case. But there is often a situation where the Beis Din does not know which direction to turn, and the Tshuvas HaRosh says that the halacha is the Beis Din is not allowed to let go of this case. They have to finish the case and they have to give a ruling. And the question, of course, is how are they going to give a ruling, and why do they have to do it? So the Tshuvas HaRosh says that it's important for the Beis Din to establish peace and order in the world. And if they don't give a ruling, the anarchy that was there before will just continue. So, but how can they? How can they come a ruling when they don't know what to do? So he says the Chazal gave permission for the Beis Din in such a case to rule according to his opinion, in the manner of a compromise. That is to say, he can make pshara. And this is true, by the way, whether the dayanim have a doubt, halachic doubt. They, you know, they have a complicated shaila in Shulchan Aruch and halacha and the poskim, and they just can't get themselves out of the tremendous problem they have. Or says Rabbeinu Gershom, says that even if, and this is quite common, where they have a factual doubt, where they're not really sure about the metzias. Now, to give you a classical example of type of things where there's no fraudulent involved, the Marsham brings an interesting tshuva, quite relevant even nowadays. There was a community that had a shul, and the members owned seats in the shul. By Yayoyim, they decided it was time to build a new shul, and the new shul was going to have large, more seats, more expensive, and everybody said, well, but I had a seat in the old shul. So they have to figure out, how much was a seat in the old shul worth? How are you going to figure that out? There are certain things that there's just no way for you to be able to put a value. If the shul would still be standing, so the halacha is, you find out how much it goes for. But if it's not standing anymore, and how do you determine what the value of the shul was? Says the Marsham, this is a clear case of factual doubt. You don't know what it's worth. The dayanim should nishta, they say it's an arbol, not from his sleeve to come out of that. But lefi ra'os einei hadayanim, they should come out in the spirit of pshara. They should come out and determine how much it's worth. Another example is where documents are produced in the Beis Din, and the dayanim have sort of a sneaking suspicion that something is not exactly kosher about these documents. And you can't always put your finger to it. One of the classic examples is where, you know, in English law, you have a rule called the Limitation Act, which means that after a certain amount of years, the right to claim from based on certain claims is extinguished. You can't proceed. Halacha doesn't recognize something like that. Unless, halacha, if you bring up an old, it's called a Shtar Yoshan, you can collect on it. However, if there's the question, well, where were you all these years? Why didn't you claim it till now? And the Beis Din is not satisfied with the explanation given, so you have a doubt here. Says the Poskim, the Shulchan Yankiv, and others say, in such a case, with fishy, the documents are fishy, again, what they should do is they should use Re'os Einehem, their opinion, and make a pshar. But if you notice an interesting thing, he said that the reason why they have to do this is that there should be peace and order in the world. In other words, it's important that there should be, let's say, you might call it a public policy argument, that there has to be peace. So the general reasoning behind Pshara is because the ultimate goal of a Din Torah is not necessarily to restore justice in the world, it is to restore peace between the parties. That's one reason. There is, however, another reason for Pshara. And this is already to help the Dayanim, because the Gemara says, I mean, that occasionally a Dayan will not, he can make a mistake, and the consequences of a mistake, a judicial mistake in Halacha, are quite serious, and a quite serious avera for the Dayan. So besides the idea of Shalom, the Marsha puts it beautifully in Sanhedrin, he says that there is shalom bein ish lechavero, and there's also shalom bein odom lamokom. And the dayan has to live b'shalom with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he says, in order for the dayan to make sure that he doesn't get into trouble upstairs, he is allowed the option of pushing for a pshara, especially where you have difficulty in determining the din. So there's another advantage, as I say, of Pshara, is, and this is, it's not a selfish thing, because we're dealing with Dayanim Kol Beis Din Ho'isa Pshara Tomi, we're speaking about the most Erlich Beis Din in the world it could be. But still, they can also make a mistake. And in order to help them, they are allowed to push for the option of Pshara. But there's something more. It's not only to help them. Because if the Dayan gets it wrong, even though the winning party has a sack from a Beis Din, but Klapi Shmaya, he's taken someone else's property. However, if a Pshara is given, if the option of Pshara is put forward, and in a case where the Dayan is even allowed to force the Pshara, then that becomes the Din. This is the interesting Mechilta, where the Mechilta says in the Parsha of Yisro put as his qualifications for Dayanim, one of the qualifications was Yireh Elokim. Says the Mechilta, who is the judge? Who is the Dayan who makes the Yireh Elokim? That's the one who does a Pshara. Oisim Pshara Badin. The reason is simple, because a Yireh Elokim doesn't want to get it wrong. And if he's allowed the option of Pshara, he won't get it wrong. Let me go back to the idea of Shalom, which I started with. That the main reason for the Pshara is in order to keep Shalom between the parties. There is a tshuva of the Netziv in Meshiv Dover, where he says, and a very interesting idea, he says that Shalom is very important between individuals. But most important, he says, Shalom is between kehilos. That when Kehillahs fight, and he had a story over there where Sephardi and Ashkenazi Kehillah was fighting, then he said definitely the preferred method of the resolution is Pshara, because the worst thing is when Kehillahs fight, Shlo Yishoyer HaMachlokes Kimo Shehoyer L'Knei Adin Torah. The Machlokes shouldn't be, the job of the Beis Din is to make sure that at the end of the day, when the Din Torah is finished, it doesn't go to appeal. But it goes that that there is a shalom between the parties. Very curiously enough, a Kohen told me once that the successful resolution of a Din Torah, in his opinion, is when the enmity that the two parties had to each other is gone and it's collectively transferred against the Beis Din. However, I've spoken all about the advantages of Pshara, there is an exception, however. And that is when a claim is baseless. When someone is sort of a litigious person, comes into the Beis Din and makes a mountain out of a molehill, or takes a claim which is, in Hebrew, a beautiful word called mifubruk, maybe fabricated. It's a baseless claim. It has no base at all. In such a case, Yerushalmi says in Megillah, Rav Shimon Gamliel Oimer, he says, Al shleisha dvarim ha'olam oimed. What are they? You know, Al Hadin, Al Ha'emes, Va'al Ha'Shalom. Says the Yerushalmi like this, Na'as Hadin, if you did Din properly, then it will become Emes, Na'as Emes. Na'as Emes, when you did Emes, Na'as Shalom, then will come Shalom. So there are cases when you don't begin with Shalom, when you begin with Din, and Din will lead to the Emes, which will lead eventually then to the Shalom. The Chuvas, or the Ruah, he says, that the Dayanim have to see that if a Pshara is not mandated and if the Pshara is wrong, not to touch the Pshara. The interesting concept in Halacha, you're aware of, it's called Lifnei Meshuras Hadin. Some people believe that Lifnei Meshuras Hadin and Pshara are interrelated. There are certain strands that are common to both. And the Gemara says, Lo nechav Yerushalayim, elo bishvil shehamidu divrehem al din Torah. Says that Chazal say that Yerushalayim was destroyed because people insisted on din Torah. What do they mean din Torah? Not to work with ni meshur sadin. The Gemara says they'll have him bo metzia though. That ni meshur sadin is also a type of din. And therefore, in the Divrei Malkiel, one of the famous Litvish Poskim in the last century, says that if the parties accepted pshara, to do a pshara, then you can be koifa, you can force even lifnei meshuras hadin. Normally you can't force people to do lifnei meshuras hadin. I saw a tshuva recently, an interesting case, where normally speaking, a polygraph, a lie detector, is not accepted in halacha as a proof. However, as an umdana, it is. It's considered. It has some weight. Not a total proof. So I saw a tshuva from Rav Nachman Yisrael who said that in a case when a polygraph has determined that one is lying and one is not, you can't say it's baseless. But he says you must make a pshara in that case. You have to be careful that even if you see the din is in, it forces one way, but if the polygraph shows the other, you should opt for pshara. Let me just finish off with one word that my father, said. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that the word bitzua is, Reb Meir says, Lo nomar b'tzeya. Who is the where do you find the word b'tzeya in the Torah? You find it by Yehuda. When Yehuda said, Ma betza ki na'arog es ochinu. So then Gemara says, V'chol ha'meborech Yehuda. And anybody who praises Yehuda, harez emanayit. He's cursed, as the Pasuk says, b'tzeya berech. He praises the b'tzeya ne'et Hashem. It's cursing. So the question is, why? If we praise Bitsua, we praise Pshara, what did Yehuda do wrong? The answer is, my father said, that it depends why you're doing the Pshara. In Yehuda's case, he did the Pshara because it was more convenient. He said, what did Yehuda say? He said, what are you going to gain? Ma betza, what are you going to benefit if we kill Yosef? Let's sell him instead. That's not a mitzvah. Where you have ulterior motives for the pshara, for the bitzua, then it's not a mitzvah, it's a curse. On that, Gemara says, Kol ha-mevorech Yehuda ha-reiz emanayit. You have to be careful. When one does a pshara, the purpose of the pshara should be for the din, l'shem shemayim, for the parties, for shalom, but not because it's more convenient and it's more easy. In that case, as the pasuk says, "Votzei Averich Me'eitz Hashem."
Sadal di sadal shemayi rabu.